This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Julian Gill, how is he doing? It's the Internal Battle Podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone. I get a double intro, effectively.
He does.
But what are we here to do today, Scott Tilford?
My friend, are here to answer or just talk about whatever is on people's minds, whatever talking points they have, whatever questions they have. We did do a big old, you know, welcome to the new year, welcome to the new way things are going to be in 2022 as we keep doing this last week. And I did get a whole bunch of different questions, which I thought we should roll over. So I've just done a rollover from last week's stuff. It's a lot of Happy New Year's. There's a lot of people's recommendations, a lot of people's gaming resolutions. And we'll just get through as many as we can. So massive thank you to everybody for sending their stuff in. And like I said, we'll get through as many questions as possible. First one from Toby Wellington, who says, happiest of New Year's to you both. Thanks for the great content. Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate.
I have a PlayStation 5 and I've completed Returnal, Deathloop and Guardians of the Galaxy. What else would you recommend on it while waiting for bigger titles across 2022? Now, I think let me tell you. So the thing is, when he sent this in, I saw this as I was putting the questions together. And I think if you're new to PlayStation 5 and you want the best that system can do, weirdly, I would get the Matrix Awakens demo because that's the only thing out there that shows you what Unreal Engine 5 can do.
But that's not PlayStation 5 specific, though.
No, it's not. If you want PS5 specific stuff, then I would go down the route of like Spider-Man. I would play the 2018 one. I would also, yeah. Miles Morales is incredible. Ghost of Tsushima, now that it's got a PS5 update. Liquid Butter, super smooth game. Horizon, what do you call the other one? Zero Dawn is, yep, a nice smooth game. I also wrote down Final Fantasy VII Remake because that is yet to come to Xbox. It is on PC, but for the most part, it's a PlayStation exclusive. And the Ratchet and Clank games.
I was about to say the Ratchet and Clank game is the one that I'm looking forward to the most to playing when I get my PS5 eventually in about 5 years' time.
I mean, that's the thing. If you go down the route of like, what can I only play on a PS5, then it is very slim pickings. But if you have a PS5, you might as well make the most of the stuff that's there. And for me, we just did some like bespoke awards on this week's main podcast on Wednesday, where me, Ben Roy, and Josh just made up awards. And one of mine was so this is what the generation's supposed to look like. Like award, which went to Matrix Awakens, because like nothing else looks that visually astonishing or lifelike or whatever. So if you just want a little taste of what things might look like in the future when they're not being cross-platform developed, check that out.
I remember watching the Matrix gameplay play out, and I was still like, oh, okay, this is just like a vertical slice demo thing there where it's not actually indicative of what the final product is. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, somebody's actually playing this right now. And I'm like, what the hell is going on?
I had that because I remember having that feeling when the PS2 footage started dropping and just being like, oh, okay, this, because it was such a massive step up, PS1 mm-hmm. to PS2. And then we were always told over the years that you're never going to get that feeling again. And it's like largely true. Like the jump from PS3 to PS4 wasn't as big, whatever. And PS4 to PS5 has yet to have that moment. But when I sat down with Matrix and it zoomed out and you were just in the city and you could fly around and it's all photoreal, and I had that moment of like, is it 2000 again? Because like, I feel genuinely amazed by this.
I must have told you the story of when I finally got my hands on Final Fantasy VIII. I went over my friend's house who like, he's got like a PC, so he was already like a big PC gamer at that time. Right. And I'm just there like, I've just got Final Fantasy VIII for the PlayStation 1. I brought my PlayStation 1 over to show him. And I was like, listen, man, like this is the best video game graphics ever going to get. It's like Quetzalcoatl, the bird, like the lightning bird. And now looking at it now, it's like, oh, it's like five polygons that looks like a dish rag flapping in the wind.
That was Final Fantasy X. When you summon Ifrit in Final Fantasy X, all the flame effects, I was just like, life's not going to get any better than that. That looks just like real life. It looks genuine. genuinely incredible. But I don't know if I said this on the podcast just for a laugh, but when I got into Final Fantasy back in the day, one of my friends had Final Fantasy 7 and I went to buy 7 at HMV, which is a UK chain. They didn't have 7 in stock, but they had 8 in. And in my head, yeah. I just got that.
It's better,
like,
yeah.
I'm like Nigel from Spinal Tap. Well, it's one better, isn't it? It's, you know, I'm just like, I just get that one. And so my first one ended up being Final Fantasy 8 anyway. But yeah, PS5 stuff I feel like is yet to fully kick in. Like there are recommended titles, but everything that I've said is on PS4 as well. It's just that you get the best version of it on PS5. So I think just make the most of it, like, you know, while you can, kind of thing. And definitely Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart is one of the best showcases of SSD loading. If you just want to look at entire worlds loading in, going, oh my God, that's a thing that we couldn't do before. Then there is that. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, Happy New Year, lads. Is anyone actually excited for Pokemon Legends Arceus? I feel like it's not being talked about very much as much as the other releases across the next few months. It's definitely the one I'm most looking forward to. Now, this is interesting. What's your gut say towards
this
game?
Well, I only just saw trailer footage for it today because it just popped up randomly on my Twitter. And I was like, oh, look, a brand new Pokemon game. Let's check this out. And I was like, oh, it's just another open world thing. And like, I really want to love this, but it's just, I've just not been enthused about Pokemon for so long now. And it's like the last time that I was like, this is the be all and end all of video gaming moments was like Fire Red. Like I was so and Heart Gold and Soul Silver when I got, when I got them, I was like, this is absolutely brilliant. But then I was just like, ever since then, I've just kind of waned with it. Like, it doesn't seem like they're moving the formula along too much. And when they do, it seems that the fans are always decrying it, saying, take it back, take it back.
That's what's really interesting with this, because I feel like they've been back and forward on the marketing. Like, it's interesting that they've announced it as Pokemon Legends Arceus. Like, it's not, it is and it isn't a mainline game. I think it'll be retroactively made a mainline game if it goes down well, because they've completely overhauled everything. It's the first one that has a decent budget to it that isn't just really boring and turn-based. And I love turn-based combat so much, but the way that Pokemon does it has been the same since 1996. Like,
pretty much
Sword
yeah.
and Shield even has like it's the same animation pacing, it's the same text prompt, it's the same. And so, like, for me, Sword and Shield was like the last time they can get away with it. And when they showed Arceus, and it's very much Breath of the Wild, it's just like, I mean, even down to the same trailer shot of like the way that Link's on the mountain is the same as the dude in the Pokemon trailer. And so I was like, cool. And then they showed the new combat system, which I'm not going to be games journalist 101, but there's a bit of Dark Souls in it, because there's a bit where they're going up against this massive creature and there's a life bar on the screen in the middle of the screen. And the thing is like charging at you and it's real time combat. And so, like, the way the combat works now is that you throw a Pokeball out, you summon your dude, and you can shout commands to them in real time whilst also dodging the thing that you're fighting.
Yeah,
and you can also, there's a third person shooting thing, you're throwing items at it to weaken at it, and I'm like, maybe that'd be cool.
Now, I'm totally on board with the idea of them changing up the combat thing, but I feel like this is going to stink of Final Fantasy 14 or 15, where it's going to be like, you're going to have some degree of control over it, but it's going to be like, your attack isn't going to like line up with you pressing the attack button. That's why I loved the Final Fantasy 7 remake, is that they made the downtime actually count for stuff. Like, you were always doing damage and you were dodging attacks. But in Final Fantasy 15, you must have recognized this. Like, you'd be dodging out of the way,
combat,
but because of the fact that the enemy had registered that it had already attacked you, it would still do damage to you even if it wasn't hitting you. And I hated that.
That's an incredibly valid point.
I worry that that's going to be this game, because you're going to be yelling commands to your thing. Just be like, right, go attack this. But it's like, okay, I've got to wait for my gauge to fill up. And oh, the enemy's not here. I can't attack. But also, it's already attacking you. It's like, ugh.
That's the thing. They've freed all that up. So the gameplay clips that they've put out have been in real time, where you're sort of just watching your Pokemon fight in real time whilst you're dodging and running around. But that's a really good point, that if they, depending on how they've managed the hitbox side of things, if some giant creature just storms right at you, that's why the Dark Souls comparison came in, because it was all of a sudden, it was thing is in your face, killing you all of a sudden. And I was like, if that just runs in and gets and wipes you out, there's that side of it. But also graphically, like, I'm not really one to harp on about graphics, but it does look a bit lackluster. I feel like they've really toned it down to hit, to maintain frame rate. And even then, I think it's barely going to hit 30. Because when they, you know, when they've been showing it, it's just really choppy.
I don't understand as well when people say, like, oh, it's because the Switch's hardware can't handle this. It's like, when you look at how Mario Odyssey runs on that system, it is like so smooth and it looks beautiful as well. So it's just about optimization. And like Game Freak have always found a bit challenging making the leap from 2D to 3D, because every single time they've tried it, there's always been a bit of like ropey animations here and there. Now, to answer the question, to get back on track, Yes, I am excited, but as with everything in my entire life, I approach it with great apprehension.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I think I'm a bigger Pokemon fan than you in the... The thing is... Like,
100% you are.
Because I loved it as a kid. Like, I Generation 1, loved it Inside Out, did all that stuff, saw the movies, whatever. Didn't care about anything else until Pokemon Go came around, and then that got me massively back into it. And I still play Pokemon Go, like, every day. And so, like, I've got that going on. And so I keep buying the Pokemon games. I got Sword and Shield. I got the remakes of Diamond and Pearl. But they're so similar to old school stuff. They still play like those old ones. And so, I've loved a little bit of a Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee kind of thing. But yeah, I'm curiously optimistic. I think the way that they're rolling it out is very tepid because they don't know if they should fully commit to this yet. So they're just sort of like, well, this is potentially the new way for things to go. But I guess we'll see how the Pokemon fandom respond to it overall. Do you want third person shooting in your Pokemon game, or do you want it to be more old school? Or because there's even like hide in the tall grass and wait for the creature to walk past and then get them that way. And I'm like, yes and no. Like, yes, but everything has tall grass now.
It's strange when games like this come along because they're trying so many new elements that you think to yourself, oh, whoa, are we just running before we can walk sort of thing? Like, we haven't even proved that the concept is good. Like, yes, you're trying to ape all this Breath of the Wild stuff that you can do. And yes, there are so many new things that you're trying that it is very appealing from a player standpoint because it's like a fresh experience. But like, if even one of these isn't up to par, if it's been baked into the core experience and you have to do it over, like, for example, you just saying about the hiding in the tall grass, what if the AI is so balked on that it completely ruins the experience? Well, you're going to just walk away from that just going, oh man, I'm not going to remember the other 15 good things that they've added in. I'm going to remember that one bad thing they changed that ruined the entire experience.
That's the thing. I think with Nintendo games and obviously with Game Freak stuff, it's like, does charm come through above all else? And I think that always the thing, that's something that makes Nintendo stuff immortally appealing if they get it right. And so, like I said, I'm curiously optimistic. I love the look of this thing. I genuinely had a dream that one day they would make a Pokemon game where you control your trainer and you just shout commands at a real-time Pokemon, like in the show, like just being like, do Thunderbolt, and then like, you know, you have to run out the way and Pikachu runs in, and like, I love the idea of that so much. I just want it to be smooth and playable and not cumbersome, and like you said, not get wiped out by a creature with a big, you know, splash damage attack.
What I don't understand, though, is that like the worst part of anything, be it like Transformers, Pokemon, anything that involves you dealing with something that is far better than humanity, why do we put so much focus on the human element of it? Like, I could not give two squirts of piss about my trainer. Like, when I throw out the Pokeball and I summon my little like critter to fight for me, let me take direct control of that thing and put it into like a Pokken-style fighting thing.
I was just going to say Pokken, like, did it, yeah.
If they did that and they made it into like a battle arena style thing that was like really, really fun, I would be so happy, because it's like you run up there, you do that. Yes, maybe you've got to mitigate when your trainer gets too close to the danger, but maybe you can be like in control of them when that happens and then go straight back into the action.
That might be the best idea for a Pokemon game. That why haven't they done that? Like, if you were exploring as a human, you throw the Pokeball and the camera then zooms right in and follows the ball down, and you'd hop out the ball as a Charizard or whatever and then fight, that'd be brilliant.
The closest that we've ever got to it was like the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon and stuff, and even there you would like too much stuff for the JRPG.
That new one as well, the three lane one, Pokemon Unity. No, it's not Unity. Whatever that three on three lane one is. I'm doing weird hand motions.
Have some footage of it, but I can't remember.
There's an MMO type one. I'm getting my genres all mixed up. There's a thing. There's a MMORPG battle arena, all genres in one Pokemon game from last year where you play as Pokemon, and that was the coolest thing about it. I couldn't get on board with the rest of it. But overall, yes, I'm looking forward to Pokemon Legends Arceus. It's only out in a couple of weeks, so I guess we'll see what state it's in. Mm-hmm. Next question from Luke Cullen, who says, what's a moment in any game where there was no choice that you wish in hindsight there was, and one where there was a choice that you wish in hindsight there wasn't? Big love to all you legends at What Culture, and you make the days brighter and the good days better. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cullen. Mate. I mean,
this is interesting.
I have an answer for this, and it is one that has bugged me for years. In L.A. Noir, I love this game. I am very much with Josh Brown on this one, because you're not too keen.
I'm not a fan. No, I think it fails.
Excuse me. I really love the atmosphere of that game. I really love the direction that it took. The one thing that really annoys me was that Cole Phelps is your character up to a certain point, but he makes actions and decisions outside of your control that really do go against what I want. Like, for example, I know that they are basing this off of the crime noir film style, where you're supporting you're following a character that has flaws and a person that maybe isn't the most angelic of sorts, even though they are fighting for the overall good of the area that they're in. Now, Cole cheating on his wife is something that I was just like, I don't want this. It adds nothing to the story. And I do. And the emotional payoff at the end, where like his mistress is complaining that that they should look into his death, and his wife and her are having an argument. It's like, this is nothing. I don't like this. Like, it adds nothing to the story. In fact, it detracts from it, because from that point on, I was constantly just thinking, oh, Cole Phelps isn't a character that I'm in control with. I don't have control.
Yeah, the way they frame that reveal as well, that he's actually like cheating on his wife and with someone else, it's shot from like afar, and you sort of see him go into a room and it's like, oh, I guess so. And then that doesn't really factor into the story that much, unless you're going to argue that, you know, the way the story plays out, that he was supposed to go down that way because he wasn't like an actual righteous man and whatever. But I think that thing's all over the place.
She never even like appears in terms of like a story capacity for like a mission, or there's no must rescue this woman, or this woman has like got you into trouble sort of thing. It just is a thing that happens. And it's like, it's even just lightly implied before being out and out called. It's like he goes to the club a few times. He looks on at her with admiration, and then all of a sudden he's in a relationship with her. And it's like, I feel like we've jumped so much, and maybe it's because of the fact that the dev team had to cut so much content.
The development was meant to be
like, maybe it would have been fleshed out. Maybe it would have been allowed to breathe, and maybe could have been a bigger part of the story. But his fall from grace just felt like something that was just so out of character for how I was playing a detective who was trying to do the right thing.
See, interestingly, I'm kind of going to go the other way, because I love in The Last of Us at the very end how Joel kills the surgeons regardless. Like, I love that they put you in that mindset. Yeah.
They make you think it's a choice, don't they?
Yeah, they make you think it's a choice, and then they go, no, this is what this guy is doing. Like, Joel fundamentally as a person, as an entity, is taking back control and getting his daughter back this time because he was denied it at the beginning. And so like that then puts you in a different mindset. Like, personally for me, whenever there's a choice, especially a story choice, a branching choice, whatever, I hate making it, because I'm fundamentally, I just think of it as rejecting a part of the game. Like, I'm like, okay, I want to do this, but I just want to see whatever story you guys want to tell. And like, maybe part of that is fundamentally choice. It just fits into gaming as a medium. But I only ever think like, well, I'm going to have to restart at some point, and I want to see the other thing too. And like, I'd love to see everything and whatever. And so like, for me, it's more powerful when they put you in a space and go, no, now you're controlling a big old POS and they just did this horrible thing, or as long as it works in the narrative. And then what do you think of that? Because I think the conversations that came out of the end of The Last of Us were great. Mm-hmm. It was all about, would you do what Joel did? And, you know, it's the needs of the many and the needs of the few and everything else.
The amount of people that didn't know that it was a choice wasn't a choice in the first place. Like, I went through there and thought that I was the person that pulled the trigger and killed him, because that's what I wanted to do in that moment. I was like, no, you know what? I've been through so much. I'm not letting you take her.
Well, and if you're trying to be pacifist, he kills the first guy regardless. He gets the scalpel and stabs him anyway.
So I was like, when I saw footage of it, I was like, oh, I didn't have a choice. But it was like, in my mind, I was like, oh, I made the choice there, so I feel okay with it. But it's like, I can't remember what video I watched, or it was like an essay that I read that was about how video game choice is actually like quite crippling when it comes to how you play your characters, because they did a deep dive into BioWare games, that's what it was, and the Fallout franchise, and found out that the majority of players play the game as like a paragon or a good guy because of the fact that there's an inherent fear of being locked out of content, quests, rewards by being obnoxious or evil. It always, because it's been instilled within us that the evil route, the quickest one, is usually just going to reward you with money or assets quicker.
Or a character dying or something.
The paragon choices are usually slower burning, open up more options, and then allow you like more support during the end game. And it's like, you can see why people choose to play more paragon, because it almost rewards you in the long run for playing as a good character. Like the BioShock first game is a great example. You either get a ton of Adam really quickly, or you save the little sisters and get a little bit of Adam, but they give you more in the long run and gifts later on that are more powerful than the evil route.
Yeah, plus in that game, like, they doubled down on like the would you kindly thing happens anyway. Like, you are going to get that. You are going to, that twist works regardless of how you played, like good or bad or whatever. And like, yeah, that's the thing. I for me, like the question that Colin said about, you know, the games where there were choices where you wish there weren't, just all of them for me. I've never loved five-starred a game where I've made a choice and gone like, well, I did that and I'm so glad I did that. Like, I would rather just go down the artistic or to whatever route and just like have them tell me a story and put me in a mindset where I have to deal with something.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So does that mean that like the David Cage games are like your least favorite genre because of the fact it's like all choices all the time?
I think I love Heavy Rain like back in the day. I think that's the only one of his that I would recommend. Like Detroit Become Human, Fahrenheit, they're not recommendable games. And that other one, Beyond Two Souls, never enjoyed all that stuff. But that is a little bit different because you're trying to, I guess the murder comes around anyway. You're trying to solve a murder mystery so you can go about it different ways. I think if a story path is a diamond, like wide as possible and then back together again, that's fine. Yeah. But if it stays wide and then I'm just kind of like, well, did I get the best ending? Is that satisfying? Oh. Should I have done this 10 hours ago? Like, yeah.
How unsatisfying is it when you get to the end of the game and realize that there are like 5 or 6 other endings and you need each one for an achievement? When you're that's like a 60-hour playthrough each time sort of thing.
Because I think that affects the artistic side of it, because you just reload immediately if it's at the very end. All you had to do was, like in Deus Ex Human Revolution, it's like, well, all you need to do is do the A or B ending if you did C before and get the other. You're just mopping it up at that point. It doesn't really like land anymore.
Very strange, isn't it, how like all these choices we're saying like less of them please, but that's not the case. Like it's more choices done better, I guess.
Yeah I think, and if you're gonna do a choice, really hit me with it and make it feel like an impossible choice and then commit to it on both sides so that it lands regardless. Next question from McAllister NYC, who says he's playing Ace Attorney. Big shout. My resolution is to stop downloading dodgy games just because they are on sale, because I'll never play them. My backlog is already too big. Happy 2022. Next question from Rich Hudson, who says, where can I buy an Egg Daddy NFT? Asking for a friend. Now, we can't get into the NFTs this year.
We can, because people have just been doing it in the wrong way. Every single time that NFT comes out, it's usually just like, as we explained before, it's a great money laundering service, but it's also just done to line the pockets of the developers, creators, publishers. Mm-hmm. And it's usually the publishers, and it's usually them just trading on other people's years of work to make a quick buck. Now, going to the question, hello, Rich, by the way. Hope everything is well. Go support Rich over on Traxian, by the way, and his personal channel, because he does lots of great content. Traxian, and they love him as well. Yes, they do lots of racing game content over there. Just want to say that I would do an Egg Daddy NFT, but only if the money went to charity, because only way to make something like this work for the greater good. Mm-hmm. Even though, as a principle, I don't agree with them because of the fact that they do they consume quite a lot of power to maintain
some of the crypto mining stuff. Is that
So, and like the idea of turning a single image into an energy wasting money pit doesn't actually sit well with me from an environmental standpoint. So
no, the literal reality of, I mean, it is just the microtransaction thing, the loot box thing. You're paying for this image. You don't really own it. You don't have access to the code. You can just say that you own it, and that's it. It's just monetizing the philosophy, the idea of ownership. I think the NFT stuff,
you know what's going
like,
to be interesting? Yes. Really interesting is if like tattoo artists ever get around to, because I know that they're very protective over their work, and there was a huge case in NBA where one of the tattoos was rendered on a player and they hadn't got in touch with the tattoo artist, and they were able to sue them. Mm-hmm. Now, there's the NFTs going to add in an extra layer of this, because if their images are already owned by the artist and then owned by somebody else, and then they get transported into a video game, what happens in that chain? Like, does it mean that the EA or 2K in this case has to pay the artist and the air quotes, owner of the image.
Well,
and the superstar for their likeness. Like, well, it's so much.
It's like, it's the Wild West right now. Like, there's that, there's a whole Congress thing that America, whatever wing of America put that out about this Congress hearing on NFTs, trying to understand and regulate them. And they can't even like narrow down the specific definition of what it is to be able to be copyrighted or plagiarized. Like, how do you actually nail that down? Because it is a fundamental distinction of the code, the entity, the item, and then what you're paying for, which is just the top layer. It's just the ability to say that you own it, but you can't, you don't own the license, you just own the NFT. So it's like,
then it was like, do you remember there was that a monkey who took a camera monkey and took a selfie of itself, right? Okay, right now this the guy got his camera back and submitted it, and it won an award. Now the question immediately arose of, does the artist, the photographer, does he get the credit for the award, or does the monkey, because the monkey is the one that took it, but he used the equipment of the photographer.
I guess it would depend.
And I think that the monkey won.
Get that on a mug, the monkey won. I think it would depend on the law of the country, if it specifies humans, or if it just says the entity that like performed the act or something. I would love the idea of just like, if a monkey found its way online and managed to sell some NFTs, then I guess we've both won and lost at the same time.
Mate, I've just had another thought as well. If we ever get a registered AI that gets, you know, like you can only have registered control of property if you're accepted to be sentient in that sense, like, or like that's like a certain level of life. If the AI has enough comprehension to be registered for that and then buys an NFT that another AI created, like, oh man, we're entering
this. That's going to be the crypto mining future. Just little like warehouses of just monitors with little robot typing hands figuring all of it out while everyone else is at work, I guess. But yeah,
the future's a scary place.
The NFT future 2022, that's what's going to dominate everything across the rest of this year. Next question from Jacob Sawyer. Thoughts on The Flash completely rebooting the DCEU, Batfleck being replaced by Michael Keaton and Henry Cavill's Superman being too busy to come back. Now, this was a rumor that was doing the rounds last week. I think it's, in general, it's just more of a talking point because Zack Snyder's Justice League, it didn't bomb, but it didn't do enough subscriber numbers to justify more stuff going forward. Zack Snyder didn't really enjoy his time on the project overall, neither did Ben Affleck. And so there's all this stuff about if they do multiverse stuff like what Marvel's doing, they can just be like, well, everything that happened is over there now. And we've got another Batman and another Superman and whatever. What's your thoughts on this stuff? I'm bottomed out on DC stuff.
I think that they could rescue this, but I feel like what they should do is lean really heavily into something that's being explored with, or was recently explored with the Joker, the Batman Who Laughs. Because they went into a deep thing of having the dark metaverse, I think that's what it's called. It might not be called the multiverse. Like there's like the antiverse, effectively, of what we are. What they could say in order to, air quotes, rectify their own wrongdoings is turn all of the previous DCEU that was a bit messy and say that that was the dark version, because then they all, because every single one of them could fall and become part of the Batman Who Laughs. So it's because you had like, I can't remember what they had funny names. There was like a Flash version, there was a Green Lantern version, there's like a Cyborg version. So you take the Justice League, turn them all into that, and make them the enemies of the new one that you're using to reboot
that. Would be stellar. They'd have to admit that those were the bad ones or something.
But you could have then cameo style things from Affleck and other people who wanted to come on and maybe do like a thing,
one
like
last
a,
thing,
like the Tom Holland and Spider-Man thing that we had recently. So you just have that. But they come in and be like, oh, you were Batman at one point, but now you are evil.
Because now they're like going forward with, we got Robert Pattinson's Batman out very soon, the next sort of solo project that they've...
I'm actually quite looking forward to that, to be honest.
Yeah, same. Like, I'm kind of cautiously optimistic for it. I think like, we've been through so many Batman cycles now, Bat cycles, where it's been, you know, like the Batman Begins era, and then there was the DC, there was Ben Affleck, and it's like...
So you and I have lived through, we've had, how many Batmen have we had? Because we've had the best of the best, Val Kilmer. We've had Michael Keaton. We've had George Clooney.
Christian Bale.
George
Clooney was my first Batman, because that was one of the
Was it actually?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was born in 89, so like when that one came out, I saw that as a kid. I think I saw Batman Forever in the cinema, I think. I can't remember any. But I loved it as a kid. There's a bit at the beginning of Batman versus Robin, Batman and Robin, where he's fighting Mr. Freeze at the very beginning. Yeah. Batman, one of the guys has like a little mini drum because it's like a band, and he punches him through the drum skin, and then the guy falls over, and Batman goes, "Good night." And I thought that was brilliant. I was, oh, he's got the one liner there.
but it's not even like a pun based on the drum. Like, I don't even understand. Like, I remember just, it's like pushing somebody off of a bridge in a shopping trolley car and then dying and not saying like, check, sign clean up on aisle 7. I was like, yeah, just be like, goodbye. Like what line is that?
Check you next week. Yeah, I think that those that I've not seen Batman and Robin in a long time, but I wonder if that's aged better than we think. Because at the time,
no,
it was just
no.
What if? What if he clicks his heels together and the blades come out and then they're skating everywhere? He's got the bat credit card and everything. What if it's a genius, a campy masterpiece?
I really don't think that it is going to be a masterpiece. I don't think it's going to be up there with the likes of like being analyzed with the thing or Predator or something like that.
All of this is to say, how long until they get George Clooney back as Batman for a multiverse cameo? Because multiverse stuff is going to be everything going forward.
Yeah,
that's what Marvel's committing to. I imagine that is exactly what DC will do, whether or not they do it.
It just
Flash,
means they can do anything and then have it say, it doesn't matter. Like, we can literally kill off all of these characters at the end and you could be like, oh, that was so emotional. And they'd be like, it doesn't really matter.
The money side of it is entirely, let's do this again. Just do it again. Just do it again. And so I think I'm curious how that stuff goes. I liked Spider-Man No Way Home, but it did also feel like brand synergy the movie. So I was just kind of like, fine.
Is anyone else kind of really laughing at the new Doctor Strange one as well? Because it's like, there's so much of it that I love. I love the visuals. I love the aesthetics that they do with all the pentagram. Yeah, fantastic. Like, there's going to be a level of quality. If they don't meddle, it will be a real blast from the past. Mm-hmm. But what made me laugh so much is when Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange reappears as the evil Doctor Strange. He's like, I'm the evil one. It's like, you actually
like the
Pro-ZD voice. You actually use the Skeletor voice to show that you're evil. It's like, oh, and he's got his slightly messy hair, like
the thing is,
the emo fringe.
Funnily enough, if you've not seen, God, what the hell do they call the Marvel? It's called What If. They do there's an animated series on Disney Plus, and
it's amazing.
Yeah,
like,
so
it's really good.
That one about evil Doctor Strange, I love, and I think they've just kind of taken that and gone, okay, let's do the live action one. But it is a bit funny in the trailer where he just pops up at the end, like, hey, by the way, you've gone too far.
It's just that, like, why? Hold on. I'm going to gather my thoughts. Do producers actually think that we're idiots? Because it's like, we can tell that somebody is evil without them having a slight hunch, having messy hair, having like really like sinister smiles. Like, we don't need to be fed that stuff. It's so ridiculous and over the top. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the best villains are the ones that have next to no emotions, or they literally appear to be good guys on the surface, but then have like a sort of really dark twist, or they snap at some point. Whereas this is just like, he's a cartoon.
Well, I think the Multiverse of Madness stuff seems to be their excuse to get the likes of Wesley Snipes back as Blade, and they're apparently going to maybe do something with the old Fantastic Four, and I don't know if they would have old school Chris Evans as
meeting himself as Cap.
So I'll take that stuff. I'll take those sort of like weird thought experiments made real, because it'll make bank. But the Multiverse stuff overall feels like it's very much the direction this stuff's going to be going in. A final question from Alpha Oliver, who says, welcome back, happy new year to you both. Now that I've finished Psychonauts 2 and dabbled in Celeste, I honestly feel a bit better about my life and have fewer regrets. I know you had a similar question recently, but what piece of media made you better people? Now, we did this a couple of weeks ago, but I included it. You might not necessarily have one for this, but I thought we were saying about Spider-Man before. I included this because in Spidey, I don't know if you've seen No Way Home or not.
Yes, I have.
So I'll not do specific spoilers, but there's a bit in that movie where things very much seem like they're wrapping up. All the villains are in prison, whatever. It seems like everything's going to be fine.
But wait.
And then Spider-Man is like, no, we can't do that. I've got to go and do my own thing. And he attacks Doctor Strange, and then he runs away and he goes and elongates the movie for another hour and a half.
And in
the moment, I was like, what are you doing, sir? I love Tom Holland, but I was like, what are you doing, Tom Holland's Peter Parker? That's the stupidest move in the world. Just send them home. And so when the movie plans out and you see why he's doing that, and they have lots of sit down scenes and therapy style sessions with the villains. And I was like, no, I was wrong. I should be able to display a better, more immediate sense of empathy and care, and not just go for the quickest solution, and not just go for, you know, there should be a super heroic level of care on display. That's what makes him Superman. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm not skewing towards caring in general in life, but I did watch that movie going like, yep, I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong. And you should try your best first, even if it is Dr. Octopus or whatever, because that is the way that you measure care. So I watched that and came out of, like, I love that movie's message overall, but it doesn't come into like the second half. But that was my thing.
I mean, that's a very nice message to take away from it, isn't it? Just like
from brand synergy, the movie was.
For me, video game wise, recently I've been playing through Disco Elysium: The Final Cut, and I won't say that it's made me a better person, but I feel like it's allowed me to accept my flaws a lot more, because basically, Disco Elysium is you failing forward the video game. Yeah. Like you try all of these things, you think in certain ways, you allow yourself to give into your natural, your reflexes and what you, your gut feeling. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work out for you. You make stuff worse by acting on impulse, by not listening to people, or by listening and not acting. Mm-hmm. And it shows you basically that extreme in any sort of like form, be it lethargy, be it apathy, be it empathy, mm-hmm. it can be negative if you're not prepared to actually stand up for what you believe in and keep trying regardless of whether or not you get knocked back or not. Mm-hmm. Because the amount of times that if it was me in that situation going up like Dubois' quest, I would have given up so many times because it would have just been like brick wall upon being like knocked back or told no or being denied the answers that you just need a simple answer to a simple question. But I feel like that's important because it teaches you about that life is a myriad of different challenges to get over. But as long as you keep pushing, no matter what the outcome is of your decisions, as long as you believed in them at the point in time and you actively try to make the best of a bad situation, no matter what, then yeah, you're going to like go out the other side and probably feel better about yourself for having tried, for having put in that effort.
Yeah, plus Disco Elysium, like one of its most masterful cards, again, not spoilers, is that it does recognize everything you're doing. Like it's like you very much towards the end of the game start getting the game like feeding back. Like, okay, we see what you went for here. It didn't work, but cool, you tried. What about this? What about this? And you get all this great feedback on who you are as a person, which is really, really, that's why that game is such a big deal.
Because for the first like couple of hours or so, you feel like you're just grinding up against a wall of just like no one's helping you. And you feel like you're just on the back foot 24/7. And it kind of makes you kind of like a little bit hostile to those around you because you feel like you're not giving me what I want and therefore I'm starting to lash out and try these more wild things to try and see if that's how it would work within video game logic or real life. But then once you say when it gets to the end and it starts showing you the effects of your choices, the effects of why you were doing the certain things or were you even led, did you have a choice? Like I love the fact that it just teaches you a lot about yourself, I think.
Funnily enough,
you think in a situation.
To bring it full circle to the choice thing, Disco Elysium, there was one choice in that game where I save scummed because something went drastically south.
Right.
And I was just like, no, it's a video game and I want that character to be alive. So I was I'm gonna admit this about myself that I need to restart this bit. But other than that, there was other bad stuff that happened because I did that once. It happened the same way again. I was like, oh, whatever then. It's just a dice roll. Fine. And then the other stuff started going sideways. I was like, well, this is just my life. This is my character's life and this is what I'm living with and whatever. But that game gives you a ton of decisions towards the end that are built on 20, 30 hours of preamble. And then when things go one direction, I think they should have a thing that lets you not reload because it's that you have to commit to it.
My one bit I remember was that I got into a sticky situation and I had to ask a favor from one character and they were like, no, because a couple of hours ago you didn't help me in a certain way or you were pretty rude to me and cut me short when I was talking. I was like, oh god, I did do that, and that's what would happen if you did that in real life. I was like, oh man.
Overall, I guess that's our collective New Year's resolution thing for our double bill of New Year's podcast is go play Disco Elysium. It's a hell of a thing. That game is now available on multiple platforms and not just on Steam, so you can finally check it out on PlayStation and everything.
The final cut edition is so good as well because of all the added in the voice service. It really does help, I think, immerse you into the experience.
I can't think of the name of the dude, but that's some like really old jazz musician who they got to do the voiceover. And guy has the best sounding voice. Dude reminds me of Logan Cunningham from Bastion or just Transistor.
Yeah.
Just a really smooth, awesome voice. But anyway, for now, it's been the Untitled Partner Podcast. Thank you all very much for sending in your various questions, thoughts, whatever you'd like us to talk about. And we'll do a fresh batch next Thursday. Check on Twitter. I'm at @LP89. Jules, what are you?
I'm at RetroJ with a zero where the O should be.
Be beautiful. We'll catch you all next week. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
On the UBP. On the UBP. UBP. We never know how to end this. I love it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree.
That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.